Hey, welcome everyone to another week of Anime Talk. Sorry for a little bit of delay. We had some technical difficulties, but we are back and ready as ever. We're glad you joined us tonight. Going to do something a little different, a little change up in the guest setup, but hopefully you'll have some fun with us. So as always, it's me, Joe. This week, unfortunately, Aeroblip will not be joining us. He is swamped with finals and other sorts of stuff, so we'll just have to catch up with him next week. But I am joined by a, used to be a regular attendee when we had guests on a regular basis, but Min, go ahead.
Hi, so my name's Min. I'm you probably know me best as LVLLN on Twitter and also on Metanorn, which is the anime blog that for which I write.
Yep. You've been with Metanorn almost a year now, right?
I started at the beginning of this year, actually.
Yeah, so
I guess coming up on 1 year anniversary. It was like January 1st, but yeah.
Yeah, so if you get a chance, go visit him at Metanorn. Metanorn's a great site. I know we've had a lot of Metanorn guests on here from time to time. It's always been a lot of fun. But tonight, we're kind of delving into a topic that not a lot of people may enjoy or different people have different opinions about, and that is copyright. So I know, Min, you wrote kind of a brief article on Metanorn recently, but for a lot of anime fans, I don't think they quite understand how copyright affects the shows they watch in general, or even how the laws affect how they can be impacted, how these laws impact how they enjoy the shows they like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, the article that I wrote was actually just like an episodic post on the latest Girls on Panzer, or I guess now it's the second to last because it aired yesterday. But I kind of had a bit of a rant where I went on, I guess for the uninitiated, Girls on Panzer last week featured a segment where the Russian tank team was singing for about a minute I guess by now it's kind of traditional, but it was a song called Katyusha.
So to cut you a little short, Min, let's save for why that's important a little later, but just keep that in mind as we get to the end on why copyright affected that 1 minute clip for those who watched it in Japan, for those who were able to watch it legally on Crunchyroll a few days later. Yep. I think that'll be a nice closing piece, I think, to really hit home, if you don't mind me cutting you short. All right, so what is copyright? You know, let's kind of go into that. So tonight we're going to use an American frame reference. Unfortunately, I do not know. Every country has a very unique set of copyright laws. I personally do not know even a fraction of those. So I'm going to go with what I know, and I know with what Min probably understands the best, which is the American frame of reference. So we're going to use, because our copyright laws are pretty generic and pretty applicable to how a lot of other countries do, because, you know, as copyright has gone worldwide, everybody tends to flow in the same direction in general.
Yeah, so, what is copyright? Well, I guess at its most basic, it's the right of a content creator to control and limit, if he or she wishes to, the distribution of his or her creative works. So, you know, intuitively, that just means, like, if a songwriter records a song, they own that song, and you cannot take that recording and distribute it any way you want, sell it for money, and such. It's a pretty basic concept, I guess, that most of us learn about pretty early on, that, you know, that you're supposed to pay and pay for these things and not supposed to just give it out and make copies as you wish.
Yeah, so in the American Constitution, too, there's a very limited scope copyright that grants, you know, government-granted monopoly for a limited time, a right to the works you create. In the original copyright, it was only a small portion of created works that even qualified. I think it was just written books, and I have to go back and look. It's been so convoluted since, but it was only a very limited amount of stuff that even qualified for copyright. But as, you know, as time has progressed, it's gotten more, it's gotten broader and broader and broader.
Right. One thing is, of course, copyright is, it's always been, like, technology has always had to make changes to it, because back when, you know, 1700s, when the U.S. was founded, there were no audio recordings, so there weren't any, like, point to saying you can copyright, you know, songs. You could, I'm not sure if at that point you could copyright, say, written music, but as you said, the initially the scope was quite limited. And to get back to the American frame of reference, the U.S. Constitution pretty specifically gives Congress the right to make copyright, and I'm going to quote here Article 1, Section 8, where it says, Congress shall have power to promote the progress of science and useful arts by securing for limited times to authors and inventors the exclusive right to their respective writings and discoveries. So this line covers all intellectual property, really. In this discussion, you know, we're talking about copyright, but the idea is that in order to, again, promote useful arts, as in give people incentive to create more art and science as well, they are giving the authors and the creators a limited time when they have an exclusive right to control their creations.
So that, and this is where you're going to see conflicts, is what's the definition of a limited time, and what does it mean to promote progress? You'll see many of the battles are fought along those two simple lines. So, yeah, we're going into the American laws here. But then internationally, things kind of take a different twist, where we've got some international copyright that also pushes down some form and function into individual countries as well. So the Berne Convention.
Yeah, so I guess the Berne Convention is really what people should pay attention to, I guess, in terms of if you're an anime fan. It's not a terribly complicated treaty between you know, many countries. It's a, it was Bern, Switzerland, I believe, in the 1880s. It was kind of prompted by Victor Hugo, actually, to I believe his original goal was to protect authors from international copyright infringement, because up until then, copyright wasn't transferable between countries except when they had you know, country to country agreements. So the Berne Convention basically codifies copyright as being, at the very least, I believe, 70 years or 50 years plus the life of the author. Or and
so,
also,
yeah.
Yep.
So that stretch of a limited time was, you know, what was originally in the American sense, you know, it was only 7 years or so, is now this, and internationally is a massive amount of time.
Right. And also it codifies that the copyright length of any given work is going to be determined by its country of origin. So all signatory countries, all works created in any of those countries are copyright protected in all of those countries, as long as it's protected in the original country it was created in.
Yeah. So just know that copyright basically extends worldwide. Anybody who's signatory to this treaty acknowledges that copyright is granted worldwide based on the country of origin, which is significant.
Right.
Because when this was written, the worldwide economy didn't really exist. And 100 years later, well, not, mm-hmm. yeah, I guess 100 years later, we have a massive global economy. So now it's a whole different can of worms.
Mm-hmm.
So what are the biggest influences in the copyright laws today? And most of these are going to be pretty obvious to you guys. It's going to be big corporations and their money. So we're going to talk about a little law here later, but it's basically called the Disney law or the Mickey Mouse law, because the biggest sponsor for changing the copyright law was the Disney Corporation and the money they threw into the American Congressional and Senate. I mean, it's a simple fact. Big corporations are the biggest influencers in how the American government determines copyright law. For better or for worse, that's unfortunately how the state of affairs are.
Yeah, so as you said, the Mickey Mouse laws, and also I believe they're all used to refer to the fact that the laws kind of guarantee that Steamboat Willie, which was the first iteration of Mickey Mouse by Disney, stays within copyright basically for eternity. Currently,
yeah.
I believe Steamboat Willie is, I think, at least 70, maybe 90 years old by now, and it's still under copyright.
And there's proof that Disney stole that idea from somebody else, but that's an argument for another day.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the Mickey Mouse Law, also known as the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, is the biggest copyright law that, on a day-to-day basis, impacts those who watch and view media and music. So keep that in mind, DMCA. If you're an American, it's a big deal. If you haven't received a DMCA notice net, you're not doing enough to piss off the man.
Yeah, DMCA was put into law in the U.S., I believe, in 1998 under the Clinton administration. And it's introduced a couple major things that's produced some major headaches for consumers like us, especially, you know, people who are tweakers or geeks like myself.
It authorizes things like DRM, and you can't, or basically it prevents you from trying to circumvent DRM or protections on hardware and software.
Right. So
it tries to abolish basic fair use, which we haven't even talked about yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so as you said, that there's the whole DRM protection thing where you're not allowed to try to circumvent it at all, much less, it's like DRM's there on purpose to be hard to circumvent anyway, but then it also has a legal protection against it. And then also DMCA has this the takedown rules where the common carrier, such as YouTube, which will post anything you give to them, has the responsibility to assume that any accusation of copyright infringement is correct and take down immediately upon receiving a notice. Immediately is a relative term. I believe it's 24 to 48 hours. But
Which is basically immediately. And so what it does is it gives these con sup these supposed content creators or content owners the ability to randomly take down stuff without justification, without proof almost. All they have to do is file a DMCA notice.
Right. So the DMCA law does state that you are committing perjury if you make a in you know if you purposely make an invalid takedown request. But in real experience, there has, I believe, never been an enforcement against that, even though there are plenty of examples of incorrect DMCA
Well,
takedown notices.
because you can't bite the hand that feeds you.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. These guys paid for the law. They're not going to slap their hand when they abuse it. But yeah, the DMCA is definitely the biggest. And there's even some funny provisions in the DMCA where, every year, every 2 years, they review certain provisions and determine what you can and can't do. So the last time they did a DMCA review, you could jailbreak an iPod and it was legitimate. Now,
Right.
next year, you can't jailbreak an iPod because these people have determined, nope, you can't do that.
Right.
So, I
So
mean,
the kind of the messed up thing is it's every 3 years and it's for
every 3 years,
exceptions
that's right.
to the DRM circumvention. And so yeah, iPhone and iPod jailbreaks were authorized 3 years ago. And the thing is, every 3 years, every single thing has to be decided upon newly. So even if 3 years ago they approved the iPhone jailbreak exception, they have to go through it again and go through the exact same steps just to approve it again. Instead of saying, hey, this was approved, let's assume that it's going to be approved, continue that and work on other things. So
Yeah.
it basically a 3 year reset back to, wherever it was.
Oh yeah, it's a mess. And then these corporations are still buying laws. We have a famous senator here in the United States that really pushed a law called SOPA. And then the corresponding House equivalent was PIPA. And I think SOPA, if I remember correctly, it was Stop Online Piracy Act. And the
Correct.
PIPA was Protect Intellectual Property Act, if I remember correctly. I'm horrible with my acronyms. But this was another push by big corporations to try to fix what they considered loopholes in the DMCA, where basically they were trying to take away more of the what was originally rights of, people making derivative works, of satire, of fair use, and trying to restrict that down to an even more limited and controlled scope. And then even apply stricter penalties to those who violated those provisions.
Right. I mean, yeah, these laws are pretty, or they have a lot of parts to them, but I think the part that really got people upset over it, and I don't know if you recall earlier this year in the, I think it was in February or maybe late January, there was a big online kind of uproar about this where Wikipedia blacked out their site, Google put something on their front page. But the what really got the internet upset was this idea that basically content owners could go to the government and point to overseas websites and say, "Hey, that's a pirate. Could you please block access to them from the U.S.?" And now I guess it kind of makes sense that content owners would want to, yeah, cut off this loophole where websites that are legal on in other countries are able to be accessed from the US, kind of bypassing the US's own copyright laws. I kind of get that. At the same time, though, knowing how much DMCA has been abused, where it's become a carte blanche where content owners can just say, I want that video taken down, you have to do it. Knowing that, and knowing that this would give them the power to basically take down any international website, any website that's not in the US could be blocked from the US just by a content owner telling the government, please block it. That was what I believe really got people upset, and
And it was
for good
without,
reason.
once again, it was without proof. They didn't have to actually show just cause. I mean, there was some minor provisions there, but all they had to do was make the accusation, and that was enough.
Right. It was far below, say, the level of evidence required for, say, a warrant or something like that. It was just, yeah, basically, we ask and they'll do it.
Yeah, which all I can do is,
Yeah.
I mean, you guys can't see me, but I'm shaking my head and sighing in disgust because it's terrible. The biggest problem with these copyright laws is that it tries to give more power to the content holder without any sort of analysis of the impact on how it affects the market and all the derivatives that are usually come from all the derivative products and content that is created when derivative works and fair use is allowed.
Yeah,
You
so
know, it's
Joe,
supposed.
do you mind if we, I guess, kind of rewind a bit and talk more about just the basis of copyright, right? Because
It's
we
true, we
talked
kind of skipped
about,
over that a bit, didn't we?
yeah, we talked about what copyright is, but so why does it exist, right? That's one question. And I think early on, we're all, again, we're taught that it exists and that it's a right good thing, but you know, what's the rationale for it? Because
True.
with intellectual property, it's kind of difficult to make the case that if somebody owns something, you should not be able to copy it because copying it does not reduce the utility of what the person owns at all.
No. So I mean, copyright was there to grant a creator enough time to produce their work, get it to market, generate some income before they were forced to before that work became public domain and they were forced to actually generate a new work and you know and maintain a steady stream of creation of new of content. I mean, it was there
Right.
to help protect just for enough to, initially, at least under the American Constitution, it was there for a limited time to allow this person to create their work, profit from it in some respect, but then be forced to, because it was a short duration, forced to create that next great content in order to maintain their well-being, their financial
Right.
income.
Yeah, I think it's I think that's an important point that copyright exists in order to enable this economy or this life career of the artist or you know inventor in the case of patents I guess, but this idea that you can't just if you know assuming that copyright doesn't exist, if everyone can copy the next best thing and just sell it by themselves, then it really reduces the incentive to create because there is very little first mover advantage of being the person who actually authored it, doing all the work when anyone can just copy you. So that's why the copyright exists, so that there is an incentive to create, so that we do have a pool of artists who just generate art and can make a living off of it. And you know, I don't think that's a bad thing. I don't think there's any sort of guilt in wanting to make money off of your art. You got to pay the bills. You got to eat all that. And as you've been alluding to, Joe, it's gotten twisted in the last 200 odd years from, as we said, a limited time monopoly to something that seems almost, you know, forever and almost as if it's inherent to the thing, as if copyright exists because there's an entire governmental system supporting it. Without it, it doesn't. There is no inherent copyright, I guess. That's what some a point that I want to make.
Yeah, and it's a complete disaster how it's been changed through the laws in 1970, you know, DMCA in 1998, and then the stuff they're pushing now through SOPA PIPA, and then internationally with treaties such as the ATCA and TPP. The TPP is Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Sorry, I don't remember that one.
Yeah, it's a newer one, and it's completely secret because it's for the best interest of everybody if they keep it secret.
All right.
Yeah,
Yeah, and that
that's
was a big deal with ACTA.
yeah. So not only that's a good point. Not only are these corporations paying these senators and congressmen to create these laws, but they're telling them don't make this public. We don't want anybody to know about it until it's passed and approved. There's no open oversight. There's no public input. Nobody knows about this stuff unless somebody leaks it or it's done. It's made into law or it's made into treaty. So there's all these back doors. There's all these backdoor ways these corporations are trying to, in the end, hurt the consumer and hurt the and distort the sole purpose of copyright in the end.
Yeah, sorry, I just lost my train of thought.
Yeah, there's so much going on. It's one of these
Oh yeah,
biggest
it
messes.
is. But yeah, kind of getting back to what we were talking about earlier, I think it'll be good to put some numbers out there, which is that when U.S. copyright was first put into law, that was in 1790, and it established a 14-year copyright length
That's right.
plus.
It was 7 plus 7, wasn't it?
Or no, actually, it was 14 plus 14. So
Okay.
it was 14 years initially, and then 14 years later, if you decided you want to renew it, you could for another 14-year term. But that was it, 20 years max, 28 years max.
True. Yep.
And then it got extended in 1831 to 28 plus 14, and then 1909 to 28 plus 28, 56 years. That's getting up there, but still within a lifetime, right?
Well, that could be
And that.
beyond the lifetime for some people, especially when you're talking about the time frame.
Oh,
But go
that's
on.
true. Yes. But then, then we get to something really ridiculous, which I guess the Berne Convention of the 1880s helped establish the idea. But in America, it was only in 1976 when copyright got extended for written works to life of the author plus 70, sorry, plus 50 years or 75 years total if the author was a corporation or if the author was not known, something like that. So
Yeah.
it's life of the author plus 50, which seems to be close to two lifetimes, really. And
Well, yeah, let's say you created something when you're 25 years old and you died when you're 75. You've got 50 years there, then another 50 years on top of that.
right. So it's effectively infinite for anybody who's living when that work is actually created.
Which,
So,
so here's what, I'm going to stop and make a gripe here. This is one of my biggest problems with people treating copyright today. They treat it as an entitlement, an annuity, something that where they feel it should be in perpetuum. They never have to create anything new. They can just milk the one creation they made and feel like it should support them for the rest of their lives. It, to me,
yeah.
it's pretty trollish of them.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure, why that sort of thinking got into place. Maybe it was the whole, recording allowing people to make money many times over from the one, performance. But yeah, as you said, since copyright lasts beyond your lifetime and, good length into the lifetime of your descendant, there is an incentive to basically create one big hit and live off of that. Instead of, say, creating multiple works over time, if when copyright was only up to 28 years, hey, if you made a huge hit, maybe you could keep making money for almost 3 decades off of your work, but then you'd kind of have to go back and do something else if you wanted to keep making money. Here, you just make one big hit. That is such a huge reward if you can do that, that yeah, there's very little incentive to keep creating. You just, one big thing.
So moving on here. So we've talked about how these things impact you and so how these things are created, but how does, as an anime fan or as a, just as a content consumer, music, video, whatever, how does this really apply to us as content consumers? So as an anime fan, fan subbing and scanlation stuff is basically illegal
Right, I don't think
in this.
there's really much controversy over that, I guess. It's again, it's Japanese copyright laws cover their works. I'm not sure exactly what their terms are, but I believe it's somewhere similar to America, where right now it's life plus 70 or 95 years if it's owned by a corporation.
Yeah, so with fan subbing and scanlations, you have this copyright infringement. Wait, maybe I should define this term real quick. The difference between infringement and theft. So it's a good semantic point. Many corporations will say that you are stealing their content when you make a copy of it. Technically, you're not, by the definition of theft, you are not actually stealing something. The original is still intact, it's still valid, it has not disappeared from the content owner's hands, per se. You're actually infringing by making a copy that is no longer under the control and purview of the content owner. So we're going to use those term. We're not going to use the term theft when we talk about a fan sub, a scanlation, things like that. Those are infringing works, not stolen works. And hopefully you guys understand the difference between copyright infringement and copy and just in product theft or actual theft of something. Because when something is stolen, it no longer is in the ownership of the creator, where with infringement, the original is still under ownership, but now there are copies out there that are not contained within that ownership sphere.
Right. So yeah, they're two different things. Fundamentally, you're breaking two different rules or two different types of laws.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, so theft is usually a criminal law, where infringement is at least in the United States, infringement falls under civil law. So that's why you'll see a lot of times, that's why you see lawsuits of corporations against corporations or corporations against people on the civil side, where they're not pressing charges but suing for damages, because we are talking about infringement and not outright theft. Now, if I went into, you know, Virgin Records and stole the original copies of some music, the only ones they had, that would be outright theft, and that would be a criminal thing. But so going back to that, these scanlations and fan subs are infringing works of the original content that was created, and therefore they fall under being as an illegal or an infringement work under copyright law. So just keep in mind, every time you download a fan sub, every time you download a scanlation, technically you're committing a civil penalty, or you're committing something that breaks civil law, at least in the United States.
Right. I will note, though, however, fan subbing is not illegal. You're allowed to sub the work, and you're even allowed to distribute the subtitles that you yourself transcribed. So
true, because that's a derivative, or actually, you're not really derivative. You're translating something that is a literal fact. It's like watching a baseball game and recording the stats. You know, and you can't change the fact that somebody said something on a public airwave.
Right. So So theoretically, fan subbers could go legit just by distributing the subtitle files, but of course, there really is little reason to do that, since very little, almost none, consequences exist right now.
Yeah. So just keep that in mind, guys. I don't think that was any shock to any of you that are listening to this tonight. You know, but fair use does cover those who do blogging activities, whether that's anime or they blog TV shows in the United States. Because when you are discussing a show, it's like the news. You can't copyright facts or what's the right way to put this? I'm trying to think of the right word. You can't copyright dialogue
something. Facts or accounts of events or of actual things that happened. People are allowed to repeat that. Now, in the case of blogs, of course, you know, simply writing an article about anything. Any copyrighted media, that's fine. And even, you know, the screenshots are fine, the stuff that you see in blogs, or even little short clips, as long as they are accompanied by commentary, as in they are kind of necessary for the commentary.
Yeah.
So, you know, I could imagine certain sites not where they just, you know, it's just a little blurb and then a ton of screenshots. Maybe that might be, you know, in the gray area, but really it's all covered in that. As long as you have your own critical content or commentary of some sort, screenshots are okay. Even short clips are okay.
Yeah. So for those of you that are doing anime blogging or blogging your favorite TV show here in the United States, as long as you keep it down to the minimal content necessary to create your dialogue, you're probably going to be okay. Nobody's going to come after you. Mm-hmm. Now, this is where things get tricky, because we do have international copyright laws, but because copyright is different in every individual country, taking media legitimately from one country to the next becomes a sort of a very careful legal dance at times. So let's go back and finish your comments about Girls on Panzer real quick. So Girls on Panzer had a great one-minute clip of them singing a very famous traditional Russian song. The song was created, I believe, in the 1930s.
Yep, 1938.
1938, there we go. So this song is over 70 years old.
Correct.
But, in Japan, this show was broadcast on a cable channel, correct?
I don't know.
Something
Sorry.
Like that. So then, but Crunchyroll has the rights to restream this. They call it simulcast when it's really not. Mm-hmm. It's a few days later. But they have the rights to stream this in the United States and other countries at a later date.
Mm-hmm.
But it was missing that entire one-minute clip of that song.
Right. So, one thing I'll state here is that Crunchyroll has not officially said anything, and I believe the Girls on Panzer producers haven't either, about why that was missing. So this is all based on the theory that copyright issues were what was holding it up, which, I mean, to me, that seems like the most plausible, least complicated reason, because, you know, why else would you cut out this section of this show that happens to have a minute of a song that's still under copyright. This song, 1938, written in Russia. One thing is, and I guess we didn't mention this, this is actually a case of retroactive copyright, because in 1938, Russia and U.S. did not have any agreements on copyright, which meant anything written in Russia at the time wasn't covered under copyright in the U.S. So technically, Katyusha was under public domain in the U.S. until, I believe it was 1988 or 1990, when I forget the name of the treaty, but basically it's said that anything in the USSR or Russia that would have been covered under copyright had they had the agreement in place back then are now retroactively covered under copyright. So Yeah, 2012, Katyusha's covered under copyright because its author died in 1990, which is only 22 years ago, and Russia says their copyright lasts lifetime plus 25. So maybe Girls and Panzer should have come out 3 years from now.
Yeah, so, but even then, because it's here in the United States, the applicable United States law applies, which means it's life plus 50.
Or actually, no, sorry, it's life plus 70 in the US, but I
70,
believe
sorry.
the Berne Convention says it's the length of the original country, not
That's right.
so I believe it would still be the Russian term. But I'm not a lawyer. This is not legal
No, we're
advice. I don't know.
just so let's make it very clear. We're not offering any legal advice, nor are we covered by any legal firms. We are just interpreting based on the crazy, convoluted, and messed up spider web that is international copyright law.
We're concerned citizens.
Concerned citizens, if you have a question, please contact your local copyright lawyer or civil lawyer, and they may be able to help you through. But the best guess for this one is that yes, because of copyright concerns, they were only able to pay for enough copyright in the country of Japan and not cover that for distribution in the United States, which probably is because the copyright would have been more expensive here than it was there, based on the market size.
Yeah, that's what I've heard basically, that old classic rock songs especially, basically songs that would mean more to Westerners happen to cost more to license in the US than in Japan. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So yeah, even though they're broadcasting it on TV in Japan, it costs them much less than streaming in, well, Crunchyroll is not just the US, it's many countries. So
True.
if they wanted to stream that just one version, they would have to have gotten licenses for, I don't know, at least half a dozen, maybe even a dozen countries.
Oh yeah, the cost alone would have made the value of streaming that show zero. And actually, they probably would have put him in the hole for the show.
Right. Well, I mean, who knows? Maybe the song is so old, who knows how much money they would really ask for? But really, it's a headache because you'd have to, just work out the deal with the content owner for all of these countries. And I'm guessing, Crunchyroll, it's not a huge a company. They might not have the resources to really work out really major licensing deals, much less pay for them,
Well,
even before we consider how much they cost.
and
But
knowing how
I mean,
big Aniplex's staff is, we're probably talking like 25 people, maybe.
right, and yeah, they probably have a lawyer on staff, but I mean, well,
His job
probably
is just to
not.
keep them out of trouble. He probably doesn't want to go out looking for
Right,
trouble. But then that brings
right.
up a point too, a show like JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. Great classic rock, not a great classic, probably the best song that group made. Their song is in the ending.
Right,
And there's no way in
sorry,
heck.
what was the title of the song?
Ah.
It's a Roundabout by
Yes. By Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Yes. Yeah, by the group Yes. So, it's probably one of their better songs, or maybe I've heard some people say it was probably the best song they ever did. But there's just because it's a recent song in terms of copyright law, it'll probably and just trying to get that played over the air, knowing the music organizations and their draconian ways they deal with copyright would have made it near impossible to stream that, because every stream would have been a public performance requiring you to pay a special fee. It could have added up extremely quickly, especially when you consider it's going to be a long-running show. Your little simple Crunchyroll subscription would not have been able to help them cover the cost of that show.
Right. So I mean, again, we're really it's impossible to tell exactly why JoJo's Bizarre Adventure is not streaming. I mean, there are plenty of shows that don't for various reasons, but I'm quite sure one of the reasons that would have been on the negative side for it is the really complexity and the expense of licensing this. I'm sure like Funimation, Crunchyroll, they probably didn't want to touch it because it's a pain and
Yeah.
it's expensive.
Which kind of brings up a good point. A lot of these anime create their own opening and ending songs unique to that show. Which begs me to think, which infers in a way that by having you save yourself on your copyright when you're trying to distribute this stuff because you already own it. You don't necessarily have to charge extra, or it's not an extra cost on top because you already own the copyright and you're trying to push this to other markets. Where when you have to go get somebody else's music, incorporate it, and deal with it, it's just more expensive at the end. I'm going to go on a limb and just make a brash assumption here that it's cheaper for them to call up an artist, say, come in here, we want to create a unique song for this show, pay them the fee, and have them go away.
Well, I mean, yeah, your guess is as good as mine. I do know voice actors don't get paid terribly well, and they tend to do a lot of the singing
True,
for the
yeah,
openings and
which is probably
endings.
why they do a lot of the singing.
Yeah.
They're not, they may not be part of the whole Rhea, shakedown mafia that comes and haunts you later. So yeah, live streams get hampered quite a bit.
Yeah.
And
Now,
which
one
what
thing
we
I do want to mention is, like, if you've seen this week's episode of Girls in Panzer, you know that they also perform Katyusha as a background piece during one of the song, one of the scenes, instrumental. Now, I wonder if that's going to be in the Crunchyroll stream because that hasn't streamed yet. Theoretically, if the reason they couldn't include Katyusha, that part in the previous episode, was due to copyright, they shouldn't be able to include this part either. So I don't
Yeah.
know what's I'm curious to see what happens.
It's if it does show up this week and not last week, it could be the difference between a instrument only versus lyrics, because sometimes the lyrics are copyrighted separate. If they were to have done it two different times, the lyrics could be cop the song could actually be older than the lyrics. So the copyright on the song could have expired, but the lyrics might not.
Okay, yeah, that's I guess yeah, that's a kind of a headache, right? Just figuring all this out, this that these laws really, it's not just that they're onerous, it's that they're confusing. There's different countries, as we mentioned, the fact that yeah, the lyrics and the music might be covered under different terms. You got things like retroactive copyright, which we mentioned. And
Yeah.
really, I think that goes against the whole, idea of increasing the quality and quantity of art, right? Because here we have a clear case where we don't know if it was, onerous terms of the copyright, or if it was just the pain to sort out all the laws, or maybe it was something completely else and we're on a completely wrong direction. But assuming the one of the first two, we have a clear case where copyright law made this piece of art worse in the US because for whatever reason the creators didn't want to, deal with the licensing. And yeah, that's exactly not what copyright's supposed to do.
No, so copyright is there to promote, promote the progress of works, of creative works within the environment, within that social environment. It's not there to protect, it's there to protect the owner for a limited time, but in the end, it's there to help promote more works, more creations in the long run. And when you begin to lock down these works for 100, 200, right now it could be up to 120, 170 years, it's
Yeah,
stupid.
right. It's, and
You're
I
not
think
promoting the
ultimately,
general well-being of the of your society that way.
right. I think it as on the same theme, it really is hurtful to culture and to the fact that, hey, works tend to build upon other works. Disney's, most successful cartoons are public domain stories, right?
Oh
Snow
yeah.
White, even
Cinderella.
The Lion King's based on Hamlet. Yep, Cinderella. All these, Little Mermaid, Aladdin, all these stories that where they took something that was in the public domain, transformed it, created a new work that was, in my opinion, fantastic. I love these early 90s Disney cartoons that were all based on these old stories, and they made plenty of money off of it too.
Yeah.
And
So the biggest
yeah.
pusher of copyright is one of the biggest, well, biggest infringers on public domain works.
Right. Ironically, they're trying to guarantee that nothing else goes into the public domain, it seems.
Yeah.
There's a whole other issue that we didn't really discuss, which is that fact that public domain competes with newly created works because they provide entertainment, which might be a big part of the reason why content creators want to keep public domain from expanding.
Yeah, they fear competition when they should realize that competition's good for all, and they probably should quit milking what they've done to this point. So we've kind of gone to this a little bit. What can happen to copyright violators? The big thing is lawsuits. So as we talked about, infringement is not a criminal penalty in the United States. It is a civil penalty, civil violation. Therefore, a corporation can come after you for as much as the United States laws will allow, which can be millions and millions of dollars, and basically sue
Billions,
you to
sorry.
billions at times. Yeah, ask Samsung, billions of dollars.
Well, no,
So
I was actually referring to Jamie Thomas, who was, I believe, convict or who was who lost a lawsuit for, I believe, a handful of songs, maybe 24
something like
songs,
that.
and I believe the judgment was in the. Oh no, sorry, I was mistaken. No, it was in the millions, tens of millions.
Okay.
Okay, so it
Yeah, if you
wasn't
want to go
that
billions, you
ridiculous.
got to
Okay,
talk to Samsung
sorry.
and Apple.
For sharing 24 songs, she was only sued for, a few tens of millions of dollars,
Yeah,
not,
just tens
billions.
of millions.
So,
So
yeah.
that's your biggest problem. You
But
can get you can get a DMCA notice. I've received one myself.
oh, really?
Yes, I have.
Oh.
I downloaded Tamayura. Is that the one with the girl at the camera and she sees white spots? She has the dirty camera. Yeah. I downloaded the. I hated the show. I can't believe I watched all four episodes, but I downloaded it. I was like, wow, this is crap. I deleted it, and 3 days later, guess what? I get a DMCA notice from the American operator for whoever created the show in Japan.
Wow.
Yeah, so
Huh.
I do have one DMCA notice to my
To your
credit.
permanent record.
My permanent record, yep.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I will say the lawsuits, they were a big issue in the mid to late of the last decade when RIAA and MPAA were just kind of going around suing college students, really. And basically it was a form of legal extortion where they would sue you for, I believe, potentially hundreds of thousands, again, millions of dollars. Or they would offer you a settlement of, hey, only $3,000. You pay us $3,000, we'll go away. This lawsuit doesn't happen. And what they would do is sue, hundreds, thousands of people at a time,
Yeah.
and each offer each of them, the settlement. Where, and so, RIAA and MPAA eventually discover this is not profitable for them. It's also hurting their PR. But other companies have picked up on this, and right now the big thing is for pornography producers to do this, because with pornography there's the added fact that even if you accuse someone of this, that blemishes their name, even if they get away with it. So people
Yeah,
are
social
really
shaming.
unwilling to, people are really unwilling to go to lawsuit over this, even if they're innocent. So again, they're extorting people, and some lawyers have even gotten into trouble because basically they would give the court a request to subpoena the IP addresses and the actual addresses of all these people who they caught, on BitTorrent and such, downloading their work. And then refusing to sue them, basically, because all they're looking for is the $3,000, $5,000 settlement.
Yeah.
So they were using the court as a way to get their marks, basically.
Yeah, so continual abuse.
Yep.
So.
And I'd also want to mention in the topic of anime, believe if, I don't know if it was Funimation, but a company sued 1,337 One Piece downloaders.
Yes.
1337 being a pretty significant number to those online. And apparently I haven't really heard much about it, but I believe they dropped all suits except maybe one. I don't remember,
It was something like that, but yeah.
but generally the lawsuit's not something to worry about if you're downloading anime or nowadays MPAA, RIAA works, not really, but if you're into porn, that might be something to,
But the bottom line is they will come after you, so just be aware of that.
Right.
So, man, we've kind of gone through a lot of stuff tonight. We've almost been at this for 45 minutes. We probably should start winding things down.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts?
Let's see. I think I covered most of it, everything with copyright. I'll say, basically, I always learned from the beginning that copyright was something that was, inherent until I thought about it for even 5 minutes and I realized it isn't. And I think that sort of mentality is really dug into people's heads by, by the RIAA, MPAA, these content companies. So I think it's good to, think for yourself. Just, why does copyright exist? And, come to your own conclusion. Maybe you'll decide, hey, it is something that the author deserves, and that's something I disagree with, but I respect that if that's what you really think. But, just think about it for a bit, and maybe, more people will start thinking about how to make it better, because right now I believe that we're in a bad situation.
Yeah, and I don't, there's been a lot of talk I know in the United States about how to fix copyright. You can't go a week without seeing an article about the copyright. Heck, even if you want to go to more of a trollish type website, Wired had a series of articles from different people writing it about copyright. You had somebody from IBM, you had people like that were on, both sides of the aisle. It was interesting, but copyright is something you will not be able to escape, especially, growing up in a digital era where infringement is something that's so easy to do. Yeah, but. Keep in mind, yeah, that copyright violations are not theft, they're infringement. Yeah, just I would I it's one of these topics that nobody wants to get educated on, but is going to impact your life in significant ways in the future. So if you've got the time, spend a little bit of time just understanding how copyright affects you and make yourself a little more knowledgeable, because as they say, knowledge is power.
Right. And I'm not 100% sure, but I believe, Disney's going to probably try to make another push in the next 10 or 15 years to make sure that Steamboat Willie doesn't enter the public domain. So, when that happens, maybe if more people speak up, make their noise at the politicians, we can prevent this, tide from continuing and start
Yeah,
pushing.
definitely. All right, so as always, guys, oops, let me go here to, thanks for watching. You can find today's show as well as other shows at the website animeautolog.wordpress.com. We've got a Twitter account associated with the website now, so you can see feeds of posts as they come up. We usually end up posting the podcast and video from the show on Saturdays later in the week. You can find the podcast feed at iTunes. You can search for this podcast as well as our On the Clock podcast there. The videos, if you want to see just those, up on YouTube. Easy place to find them. Just look for my name on YouTube. And if you're interested in doing like what Min's done tonight, coming on, taking on a specific topic, and letting us bring it to the masses, you can email me there at the bottom of the screen. So Min, thank you for joining us tonight.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
And
It's a
next week
pleasure.
we'll have, yeah, definitely. Next week we'll have Aeroblit back, and we'll be kind of on track. Just so you guys know, next week will be the last show for this calendar year, as the next Tuesday, two Tuesdays after that are Christmas and New Year's, so we're not going to be around to serve some shows up. But so next week, come join us for one final end of year spectacular, and we'll have a lot of fun. Thank you, everybody.
Bye.